Hello and welcome to the Organic Research Centre podcast. My name is Vicky Smith. The Organic Research Centre, or the ORC for short, is an independent research charity working for better and more sustainable farming systems which promote the environment and provide good food for everybody. This is one of many podcasts which we will be recording to help celebrate our 40th anniversary throughout 2021. In today's podcast, I'll be speaking to Lawrence Woodward and Mark Measures, who are both fundamental in setting up the Elm Farm Research Centre, now known as the ORC. Lawrence was the first CEO of the Organic Research Centre, a position which he held for over 30 years. He also worked closely with David Astor at the beginning of the Elm Farm Research Centre, someone who we'll talk about later in the podcast. As well as talking to Lawrence, we'll also be speaking to Mark Measures as part of this podcast. Mark has over 25 years' experience of advisory work, having established and headed up the Organic Advisory Service between 1985 and 2000. He also currently works for the Organic Research Centre as a senior advisor. Hi both, thank you very much for being involved in this podcast, which is the third in the podcast series for our 40th anniversary. To start with, Mark, could you give a bit of background to yourself, an overview of how you first became involved with Elm Farm?
I'm a third generation farmer, so I grew up on a mixed farm in Dorset. And I left Newcastle University in 1973, just as the real momentum for industrialisation of agriculture was getting underway. The whole input-orientated approach was really being ramped up and was never questioned. This is the way that food and farming was going to go. When I started to go out into the wider world, I had an opportunity to spend time working as a contractor on all sorts of farms up and down the country. So I've worked in pig farms, poultry farms, arable, dairy, sheep, beef, hill, low, which really led me to question what we were doing and where we were going. The opportunity came up to join Organic Research Centre. And in 1983, I have to say that the ideas that Lawrence and Hardy and others were developing were absolutely inspirational and groundbreaking.
And then Lawrence, you want to give an overview to how you first got involved with Elm Farm and kind of how the progression of the Elm Farm Research Centre started?
I was very much interested in the early 70s in back to the land self-sufficiency. A lot of these ideas were promoted by a guy called John Seymour, who wrote a book called Self-Sufficiency. So that really got me interested in growing food, small scale agriculture, small holdings and so on. So I tried my hand at that and did various things in that area. At the time, I was married to David Astor's daughter, and David then was the editor of the Observer newspaper. Was a friend of Fritz Schumacher, who wrote this iconic book, Small is Beautiful. Lots of the ideas developed in Small is Beautiful were published in the Observer newspaper. David was concerned about resources and particularly oil. And to simplify it, how do we feed ourselves when the oil runs out? In the early 70s, there was an oil crisis. We hadn't discovered oil fields in Alaska or the North Sea. And there was a real threat of oil running out and that posing a major problem to the world's economies. And David wasn't an economist. He certainly wasn't a farmer. But he saw parallels with economic upheavals leading to massive social problems. And that was the thing that really drove him to find alternatives. So he was interested in the ideas of intermediate or appropriate technology, which was one of Schumacher's things. And the other extension, which linked to my idea about small-scale agriculture, my interest in that, was farming and organic farming as an appropriate technology for food and farming systems. You also have to remember, this was a time of serious problems with oil. Britain was really on the rack as far as supply of oil was concerned. The economy was closed down 2 days a week. It was so the real problems. I did a basic agricultural course, started visiting farms, learnt how to milk and so on. And as a result of that, we started, foolishly, you might say, the conversion of a 245-acre farm, conventional farm, had been organic in the past, but a conventional farm in Dorset. And it was because, due to the problems that we found in converting what we were trying to deal with in a commercial farming situation, that we started looking around for advice and help. And there wasn't really very much in the UK. So that led us to Germany and Switzerland, where we met a guy called Hardy Voigtmann, who was just about to become the first professor of organic agriculture in the world. And through those conversations and visits to research places and farms in Europe, we took the decision to create a charitable foundation, an educational trust, to carry out research and development in organic agriculture in the UK under UK conditions. That led to the sale of the farm that we had in Dorset and a move to Elm Farm, to purchase Elm Farm. So the point was for us to move organic from the margins into mainstream research and development activities. So that's why we moved to Elm Farm.
Okay, thanks, Lawrence. That's interesting. And then I think it would be quite good if we could revisit that in a bit more detail. So you just explained that it was the process of converting to organic that really highlighted the lack of resources, awareness of organic farming, and kind of took you and David forward in wanting to find out more and investigating things. Do you want to take us through kind of what was available at the time and how that developed into what you did with Elm Farm?
There had been quite a few developments or events within what we would now call organic farming. So in the 30s, there was a very active movement called compost growing, which followed the ideas of Albert Howard, where people use compost to grow in their gardens and on their farms. And there were a number of farmers who were following Albert Howard's composting methods. That kind of development staggered along a bit, so going through peaks and troughs into the early 50s. The Soil Association was founded to support an experiment called the Hawley Experiment, but there were still always a number of farmers who tried to follow organic methods. So there was a body of organic farmers, but by the 60s and by the late 60s, certainly, that active organic farming and that body of organic farmers had really diminished in the UK. And there were some people still doing it as whole farms, but there were other people doing it as bits and pieces. And the drive had become to replace chemicals, to replace artificial fertilizers and so on, with organic materials, with farmyard manure or other organic inputs. So it became an input substitution thing rather than looking at the biology and the ecosystem. The thing that was critical about my visits with David Astor to Europe was suddenly realizing that we had gone down a wrong path. Our obsession with organic substitution was different to what was happening in Europe. And what was happening with you in Europe was what they were calling biological agriculture. And that was an understanding of the whole farm system and how all the cycles kind of worked together. And our goal was to, once we found this out about this and understood it, was to try and introduce that understanding of whole systems, whole farm systems, and how everything worked together into the UK to move away from the idea of organic substitution. the organization that we created with a charitable foundation, an education foundation, was the education was a catch-all. And the David and the trustees and myself were interested in initially bringing research and development information from Europe into the UK. So that was, and making it applicable to commercial conditions in the UK. So that was the genesis of creating the farm.
Thanks, Lawrence. And then we spoke before when we were preparing for this podcast. You mentioned that in the early days, you, alongside David and other members of the industry, held various meetings. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about those meetings and how it helped to develop the Elm Farm Research Centre?
We wanted to bring together the best knowledge from Europe, from alternative researchers, alternative-minded researchers, and introduce them to mainstream conventional researchers in the UK. And that was led with organic farmers, with the good organic farmers that we could find in the UK. So we organized a series of meetings that took place at Sutton Courtney, which was a house near Abingdon that David owned. And we brought them together, brought people together like this in a series of meetings to discuss initially what the research needs were of organic agriculture in the UK, or biological agriculture as we called it. And latterly, we started looking at other structures. And that also led on to an understanding of the need for work in policy and advice. So the creation of ourselves as an education foundation was important because we wanted to do research, but we also wanted the wider capacity to be able to disseminate information, to be actively involved in education, by which we eventually meant advisory work. So that process and these discussions led directly to the realization that whatever we were doing with research needed to be disseminated, and that we needed the active engagement with farmers in the dissemination. And that led to the creation of the Organic Advisory Service.
Okay, thanks, Lawrence. And we're actually going to focus on the Organic Advisory Service and the Soil Analysis Service in a future podcast. So we won't talk about it in huge amounts of detail now. But Mark, it must have been a huge advantage for UK organic growers and growers wanting to convert to organic to have this service available to them, wasn't it?
Yes, Vicky, I think it certainly was the only source of advice that was available to farmers. And I think the fact that we looked both the sort of the overall farm system, the technical side, and crucially the business. So we did always encourage farmers to properly budget for their conversion to make sure that it was going to be financially viable. I think the fact that we looked at all these aspects did mean that farmers got through the conversion and ran very successful businesses. And there are some farms that I was involved with the conversion in the mid-80s, late 80s, who 30, 35 years later, I've been going back to every year, and they're still there in business, some going on to the second generation, third generation of farmer. So what we can say is that we came up with a model that worked. And I think although the farmers themselves undoubtedly were pioneering, they were perhaps brave, and certainly innovative, fact is that they did manage to make very successful businesses out of it. And I think the fact that we've been able to help support a group of successful farmers is actually a great credit to our Organic Research Centre, because that is undoubtedly is the basis of all our work. And we simply could not pursue general policy advocacy and so on if we didn't have a good basis of commercial farmers to be able to point to.
Thanks, Mark. And as I just said, we're hoping to do another podcast in the next couple of weeks on the Organic Advisory Service and the Soil Analysis Service. So keep checking back on our website and social media for any updates on that. Moving sideways slightly, but I wondered whether either of you wanted to say a few words about Martin Wolf, as I know that he was Research Director at the Organic Research Centre. And he was really kind of forefront in helping the credibility of the research that we were producing.
Bringing Martin Wolf in as Research Director was critically important in developing, increasing the credibility of our research, developing a line of researchers, because I hadn't, to be honest, paid too much attention to that in the past. But Martin brought in a ethos of developing and bringing on new researchers. So he supervised a number of PhDs of young researchers who came to Elm Farm, and giving existing PhDs new confidence and new direction to their careers. There must be 10 researchers now out there in various countries who started their careers, or their careers took a major step forward through being at Elm Farm Research Centre under Martin Wolf. And that's a really important point that we really shouldn't forget. So, but Martin's adherence or involvement with agroforestry came through an idea of, you know, developing the farm as a functional biodiverse system. We were really at the forefront, well, Martin was at the forefront of agroforestry, and we, taking on Martin, we took on his work at Wakelands and developed agroforestry. We, in 2000, I think it was 2008, got the first research grants for agroforestry at our ORC. So we were really ahead of the game with that as well.
Great, thank you. And then Mark and Lawrence, I think it could be quite interesting for the listeners to hear some other systems and services that were set up in the early days of Elm Farm and the ORC.
So possibly the biggest was the creation of the Organic Milk Suppliers Co-op. That co-op was created by our advisory clients. And through Mark's working with four or five farmers, dairy farmers, and at that time, Elm Farm was also a commercial dairy herd. So the Organic Milk Suppliers Co-op was created through by coming together of our advisory clients. We supported and helped and co-created OMSCO because we wanted to put quality at the heart of organic milk production. The same with the organic arable market and the same with the seed market. So those were our getting involved directly with the development of the market. But alongside the research work and the advisory work, we had a network of demonstration farms. And this eventually became, again, part funded by DEFRA under a funny title thing called Seeing is Believing or something. But I think we had a dozen demonstration farms around the country where the farms were set up to take in visitors, to run courses, and to be a site for research work. But it was very much what each demonstration farm concentrated on what the farm was suited to do and the interests of the farmers. So some of them were very interested in conservation. Some of them were interested in functional biodiversity. Some of them were interested in arable work and so on and so on. So the network was a very kind of organic network and evolution. And that was, again, an important thing and became very important in bringing in the strand of nature conservation, active nature conservation on farm.
Thanks, Lawrence. So then, Mark, is there anything that we've missed or anything that you want to add?
Vicky, I'll just briefly comment about something that we haven't really talked about, and that's been some of the printed output from Organic Research Centre. And throughout, there's been the RC Bulletin, there have been a whole range of technical leaflets and so on. And of course, there's been the Organic Farm Management Handbook, which still remains the best business handbook on organic farming to be found anywhere in the world, and is whatever it is in its 11th or 12th edition now. So I think that business approach that has really stood us in good stead. And the other work of RC, of course, has included a whole succession of conferences, and bringing people together is always influential, whether it's the farm walks Lawrence has mentioned or more formal conferences. I think this is a really important aspect of our work. It's the breadth of our work which has been the root of what we have achieved. That as Lauren says, although we're nominally a research centre, in fact, it's how that research is used across the piece which is really important, and the engagement with others, the policy work, the establishing marketing initiatives, farm advice and so on. So I think it's the breadth of the work which is really important for me.
Great, thanks both. In the podcast today, we've talked a lot about the kind of beginning of the organic movement and how the ORT and Elm Farm were set up. But I wondered if you could both share your thoughts on the future of the organic industry and ORC's involvement in that.
There's quite a lot of talk about organic farming, the spin-offs of organic farming being its most important contribution, that conventional farming is going to learn some of the techniques of organic farming, and therefore that'll be the main impact. I have to say, this is not my ambition. I don't think that greening the fringes of a high input agrochemical based industrialized farming is not going to achieve anything. What we have to do from Organic Research Centre's point of view is to raise the standards of organic production, as Lawrence has said, but see it very much more widely practiced, and that would be my ambition.
And I think to do that, we have to look more widely into structures in agriculture, we need a massive effort in imagination to revisit. We can't just look at existing farming structures and see that they're fit for purpose in the 21st century and for more equity in farming and the food system. So we have to look at farm structures. We have to look at relationships to communities. And I think at the moment you have a lot of energy going into things like community groups, urban agriculture, suburban agriculture, all those areas. And, you know, for them, organic is, it's a thing they say, but, you know, there are new relationships being developed, and the organic sector isn't really part of it. The mainstream, the center or organic, it isn't really part of it. So if we're going to develop organic agriculture, we have to look imaginatively at new land structures, land ownership structures, community stuff, supply chain questions. All of these things are really important to look at.
That brings us to the end of this podcast, and I'd like to thank both Lawrence and Mark for being involved. If you would like to find out more about the ORC, whether that be our research, knowledge exchange or policy activity, please visit our website. I have included a link in the podcast introductory information to our homepage. You can also follow us on social media, Twitter, Facebook or LinkedIn, as well as signing up to our bulletin or e-bulletin via the contact part of our website. Please also keep checking our 40th anniversary webpage for the latest celebratory content, including podcasts, webinars and research fact sheets which will look back on some of our most pioneering research over the last 40 years.